Welcome to the C3 Youth Podcast, the youth ministry of C3 Church, Sydney. We're believing this message will help you discover more of Jesus Christ and all that He's called you to. For more information, you can check us out at c3youth.com.au or follow us on Instagram by searching at C3Youth.
Hey, I really like coming out here to President's Conference. This is my third time coming. I was here 2 years ago, most recently. Were any of you here 2 years ago? Cool. That was my last time, and I just think it's special that you have something like this to be a part of, and I hope you can sense that. Sometimes you don't appreciate something till you're looking back on it. I noticed the other day that in pictures, I never like how I look right now, and then, you know, I'll look at a picture of me from 2 or 3 years ago, and I'll be like, hey, I didn't look too bad, but at the time, I didn't think it looked good, and kind of life is like that sometimes. You sometimes appreciate something more when you're looking back on it. And I'm not that old. I'm 35. I just turned 35. And in America, that's old enough to be president. So you might call me President Furtick the next time I'm here. But I think it's good to take a moment just in the middle of a week like this and recognize not everybody gets to grow up around a church or a movement with this kind of energy and commitment and focus. And you get to see what God is doing all across the world, and I just think it's something you shouldn't take for granted. I have this saying I like to remind our staff of back home, that what you consistently take for granted will eventually be taken away. And that's a life lesson worth writing down. What you consistently take for granted will eventually be taken away. And so that's true with your parents, or that's true with your spouse, if you're married to a wonderful person like I am. And sometimes the things we take for granted the most easily are the things that are closest to us, because they're just there. Like, when's the last time you thank God for your eyelids? Have you ever thanked God for your eyelids? But what would it be like to live without eyelids? That would be terrible. There would be bugs in your eyeballs all the time. You know, try it. Try without blinking for the rest of my sermon. You can't do it. But they're right there. And sometimes what's right in front of your eyes is the thing that you fail to appreciate the most. So can we thank all of the leaders and youth pastors and all the volunteers? Heartbeats. Heartbeats. What a cool theme. I have 3 children. I have a 9-year-old, 7-year-old, 4-year-old girl named Abby. Abigail, it means father's joy. I tell her all the time, you better make me happy, girl. That's what your name means, father's joy. But with my boys, what I love to do, I love to wrestle with my boys. I mentioned last night about Jacob wrestling with God at the Jabbok, at that stream where he had to find out who he really was. And well, some of you are gonna be wrestling with God this week to find out why you struggle with pornography, to find out why your relationship with your parents is so screwed up, to find out why you have such a hard time believing certain things about God that you've heard, but you can't seem to get them in your heart. It's a struggle. It really is. It's a struggle. In some ways, you could say that life is a struggle, and I try to teach this to my boys, and I try to teach it by, I beat them up a lot. Not in an abusive way, just in a fatherly love kind of way is how we bond. And so I just love to walk up to one of them and put them in a headlock. And as I mentioned last night, I'm a big fan of UFC. Any UFC fans in the house? Yeah, I understand it's not as popular a sport in some parts of the world, but I love violence. I believe in violence. I think there's nothing better from time to time than watching 2 grown men beat each other half to death, half naked. So I don't know why I like it, but I do. It's kind of weird. But I like to wrestle with my boys, and I got to meet one of the fighters in the UFC a couple of years ago, and I got to take my youngest son, Graham, that's the 7-year-old at the time, I guess he was about 5, I got to take him out to watch him train in Florida. We got to go watch him train. It was amazing, man, to hear. You know, you see these guys fight, and you watch the punches, but to hear the punch, just to hear the sound of it, it's like up close. It registers on a whole different level. And so I took Graham to go meet this professional fighter, and he kind of became addicted to fighting me after that. And And so we fight all the time, but he always tells me before we start fighting, he says, "Daddy, what level are you fighting me on?" That's what he always wants to know. What level are you fighting me on? And I'll tell him, like, "I'm gonna fight you on an 8-year-old level," or "I'm gonna fight you on a 6-year-old level." And so sometimes before we start wrestling with each other, he'll say, "Daddy, only 7-year-old level. You have to fight me on it." Because what he knows is that Daddy gets a little carried away sometimes. And if he doesn't specify, I'll start, you know, cranking his arm in an arm bar. In fact, Buck, why don't you come here? I have Buck with me. Buck is actually an MMA fighter. This guy travels with me, and he is an MMA fighter. And then Chunks, why don't you come up too? Chunks is also an MMA fighter. These guys are both MMA fighters. Now, what I mean by that is one time they got in a fight. That's the only time that they ever did it. So, but Buck used to be a wrestler in college. Don't these guys look like they can throw down? How many of you think you could take Buck? Anybody think you could take Buck? Be careful. You don't know where this illustration's going. You may end up on the stage. See, Chunks thought he could take Buck. Chunks thought he could totally take Buck. So one day they're both on staff and they love each other. Like they're kind of like best buddies because they travel with me all the time. And after I finish preaching, they'll drop me off at the hotel room and I'll go to bed because I'm spiritual and I got to preach the next morning, get up and pray and seek the Lord like pastors do. But they'll go out on a late night date together. Now, I mean, of course, it's completely just friends, but they go out together. They're both married. Their wives are here. But they like to go eat together. But sometimes when you really like somebody, those are the people that you clash with the most. And so these guys, they clash a lot because they're both opinionated and stubborn and male, and they got all this ego and testosterone. So it's fun. I like to provoke them every once in a while, just poke them and watch them go. But what they did a couple years ago is they got in an altercation because we were having a competition around the office. And we do this a lot on our staff. We have a lot of fun. But because I think church should be the most exciting place on the planet. And I want our staff to know that we're not sacrificing by working for God. It's a great privilege to get to work for God. So we do all kinds of stuff and we have all these competitions. But one day they got in a little heated discussion. And so Chunks, he bumped Buck. He just kind of like bumped him like that. And when I saw that, I was like, there's only one solution. We got to take this to the kids ministry theater, and these two guys have to wrestle. So I made a deal, since Buck knows how to wrestle and Chunks doesn't, because he looks big, but just because you look big doesn't mean you can fight. Chunks is more like beach muscles, Gerard, where it's like, it's more for show. It's more for looks. But I said, since he knows how to wrestle, he was a state champion wrestler in high school. Since he knows how to wrestle and he doesn't, I'll give him an advantage. If he can last 1 minute with him, then he'll be the winner. How many think he lasted a minute? How many think he lasted a minute? What we're gonna do right now, we're gonna reenact what happened that day. How many wanna see this? We're gonna reenact. Now, so Chunk's got a strategy. He's like, okay, I can last a minute. I'll just run around the room for a minute. And if he can't catch me, he can't submit me. So Chunks, show him what you did. He kind of ran around the room for a little while. But Buck, see, Buck is fast too. And after about 20 seconds, Buck caught him. And then show him what you did, Buck. Just show him real quick and go easy on him. Buck gets on him like this. But you don't have to do it like for real. Just do it like, yeah. Show him, hold on. Puts him in the rear naked choke. Rear naked choke. That's like the funniest thing ever, just to say that. The rear naked choke. And it didn't end well for Chunks. He couldn't speak for the next 3 weeks. And he learned a lesson. Don't mess with Buck. Don't mess with Buck. Now, what's interesting, you guys can sit down. What's interesting is, yeah, give it up. Good work. What's interesting about that scenario, it's the same basic idea as it is when I'm wrestling Graham, just on a different level. It's the same idea as my friend who's a professional fighter, just on a different level. I want to share something with you today, and I got to be honest, I'm a little nervous because I just put this message together right before I came over. Lord started speaking to me. I had one thing I was going to do, and I don't even know if they got my scriptures in time. But I want to show you something from scripture that I think will set you free about your struggle, your greatest struggle in life. Now, for each person, if I said, what's your greatest struggle, you would say a different situation than the person next to you. Or you may say the same situation, getting along with my sister, controlling my temper. I don't know what struggle you would mention. And probably you wouldn't mention the real struggle, because the real struggle is something that's so shameful that you don't say it to anybody but yourself. If we did it, if I said, come on up, here's the mic, what's your greatest struggle? You would share a struggle that you thought was acceptable. So you would sanitize your struggle. You know, you'd like scrub off the real gritty part of it. And you'd say something like, well, sometimes I just struggle with my mind, my thoughts. Well, that could mean almost anything. That could mean I want to kill people. That could mean I'm planning to kill somebody. That could mean sometimes I don't even want to live myself. Or it could mean I'm distracted. I can't study. I can't learn. I feel stupid. But you say it in a category that's not very specific. You just generalize your struggle and you sanitize your struggle. But really what I felt compelled to share with you today is that no matter how many different situations are represented in this room today, your situation as a 12-year-old, mine as a 35-year-old, Graham's wrestling with daddy, asking me, what level are you gonna fight me on, daddy? It's really the same struggle. And that's what I wanna call this message. I wanna talk about the struggle is the same. The struggle is the same. I could have used for a text that passage that I talked about last night. I could have talked about Jacob and Esau, because before Jacob was wrestling with God, that angel, he was preparing to meet with his brother Esau. He's almost 100 years old, and he's still fighting the same battle he was fighting before he was born. You remember how last night I said that Jacob and Esau were wrestling in their mother's womb? Remember? It's interesting that a century later in Jacob's life, he's still preparing for the same struggle. Esau is waiting for him on the other side of the stream. And now it's been a century. It's been 100 years. So life has changed and stages have changed. But it's the same struggle. It's the same God. And what's interesting to me is I come over here, man, and sometimes when they ask me to preach to youth, I'm like, no, I don't want to, because I feel old. I feel irrelevant. I feel like, man, I don't even know the struggles that you're going through today. I didn't have Snapchat. I used to buy CDs when I wanted to listen to music. How can I relate to you? There was no YouTube. And I feel like an artifact sometimes. I feel, even though I'm considered young, like Pastor Phil, he's really not young, but compared to him. But I'm saying, like, even though I'm not completely old yet, I still feel like, what do I have to say to you? But the Lord told me coming over here, it's the same struggle. It might be in a different stream. You know, they might be struggling with this stuff, and the stuff that you used to be tempted with when you were a teenager might have been in a magazine, but theirs is on their screen. But it's the same struggle. It's just a different situation. And I could have used Jacob and Esau, how 100 years later, this guy Jacob, he's still fighting against the same guy that he started his life fighting against. That like 100 years pass, he accumulates success. He has a career, he gets married, he has kids, and still waiting for him on the other side of the stream is the same struggle that he started out with in life. And that's why it's really important that you fight the good fight right now while you're young. Because if you don't fight the struggle right now God's way, and if you don't get the victory right now, and if you don't learn to deal with the issues that are in seed form in your life right now, when they're full grown later on in life, they'll choke you to death. The same struggle. But I thought I would go over to the New Testament and in the book of Philippians where the Apostle Paul, have you heard of him? He wrote the majority of the New Testament. Really what we call the New Testament in Bible terms is a collection of gospel accounts and letters. And Paul wrote the majority of the letters that are in the New Testament. He was writing to the churches, and when he would write to the church, he would address their specific struggle. So he would write to one church if they had someone teaching that Jesus wasn't truly the Son of God, and he would talk about that intellectual struggle to believe. Or if he was talking to another church, maybe he was talking to a church where there was a lot of wild stuff going on in the cities, you know, strip clubs and a lot of rampant addictions and prostitutes. He would speak to that struggle, about struggling with your flesh. And so he would write to the specific struggles of that situation. Well, in the book of Philippians, Paul is writing to a church that he founded in a city called Philippi, and he's writing about struggles. And he's sharing about his struggles because he's in prison, in a Roman prison cell. You know what's cool? Some scholars have called Philippians the happiest book of the Bible, and it was written from a prison cell. It goes to show that it's not your situation that determines your joy. It goes to show that you might be a product of a broken home, but you can still be a whole person. It goes to show that you might have started off in a situation in life that was unfair, but through the grace of God, what was meant to destroy you can be used to your advantage to deliver you if you believe deep down in your heart. But he's writing and he says something. I'm gonna just pick up in verse 29. I'm not gonna hit those first two if you guys got it, but I'll pick up in Philippians 1:29. Thank you so much. This team, they're on it, man. I'm telling you, I just sent the scriptures. But he's talking to them about their struggle because they're going through some opposition. And so are you, and so am I. And nobody really knows exactly what the opposition was, but it doesn't really seem to matter. In fact, I said I wasn't going to go, but go back to verse 28. I can't resist. It's too good. I was going to skip this. Go to 27. I want to hit 27 too. Okay, we'll hit them all. He said, whatever happens, whatever situation, whatever hits you upside the head, whatever goes down when you leave here, whatever you count on happening and whatever you don't count on happening and whatever happens in between, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. Then whether I come and see you or only hear about you in my absence, so it's not what you do when people are watching, but who you are when no one is that determines your character. He said, I will know that you stand firm in the one spirit, striving together. You can't do this alone. You can't do this alone. You can't beat the devil alone. You can't overcome the world alone. You can't stand firm against temptation alone. That's why you gotta stay hooked up in church. Come on, I know y'all think sometimes that I've got what it takes, but if you get disconnected from the body, you will die. Striving together as one for the faith of the gospel, without being frightened in any way by those who oppose you. And they went through a list of who was opposing the church at Philippi. And the thing about it is, nobody knows. It could have been Jewish persecution. It could have been outside secular pagan persecution from within the church or without the church. Who knows? But you know what I found out about God? It doesn't matter what the opposition is when you know the outcome. And what Paul is saying is that when you know you win before the struggle ever starts, it gives you a strength to endure whatever happens because I already saw the end of this match. I already know the score while I'm in the struggle. I already know that some kind of way, he who began a good work in me will be faithful to complete it to the day of Christ. So bring it on. Hit me with your best shot. I know when the bell rings, I'm going to have my arm lifted, my hands are raised, because I win. Touch three people, tell them I win. I win. I win. He said, when you face opposition, when you go through internal struggle, he said, this is a sign to them that they will be destroyed, but that you will be saved and that by God. Okay, now I don't want to preach any of that. I just want to do this. Y'all all right? I love speaking to young people, man. I said that I get scared about it, but really, I know in my heart that there is a significance to your calling, and the significance of your calling will be matched by the strength of your struggle. In other words, the more you're struggling, my brother, my sister, I would like to tell you that the struggle's gonna disappear. I'd like to tell you that the struggle's gonna decrease. But actually, the way it works is the more you struggle, the more it's a sign that there's something so significant that God sees in you because he put it there. And the struggle is to bring it out, to bring it out. He said, for it has been granted to you on behalf of Christ, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for him. Watch this. Since you are going through the same struggle you saw I had, and now hear that I still have. You're going through the same struggle. That's crazy to me because, you know, Paul was such an important person, and he's writing to a church where many of them would have felt like, compared to Paul, they're a nobody. I wonder, do you ever feel like a nobody? Like, man, my struggle doesn't matter. Who cares what I'm going through? Who cares what I feel? Who cares what I say? And Paul does something real powerful with the church at Philippi. He comes to their level and he identifies with their struggle. If you ever really want to help somebody, if you have a friend who's going through something, get on their level and give them the gift of empathy. You know what empathy is? It's not sympathy. Sympathy is, I hear what you're going through and I feel for you. Empathy is, I know what you're going through. I've been there and I feel it with you. He gives them the gift of empathy. It's one of the most powerful gifts you can give somebody. And a lot of times that's why as Christians we're not effective, because we always want to preach at people instead of standing with them. And I mentioned it last night, but we want to showcase our strengths rather than exposing our weaknesses. But if you ever understand the gift of empathy, it's a powerful thing to connect to somebody. To say, hey man, I feel lonely too. You know, one preaching class I took, they said the most powerful two words that you can use to help somebody are not "you should." And that's what I always thought preaching was. You should. Or you should not, you know? You should, you should, you should, you should. And that's typically how we try to help people, and we want to give them advice that way. But what the professor said, he said, the most powerful two words you can use to help somebody are "me too." Me too. You're hurting? Me too. Sometimes you feel like you don't have what it takes? Me too. Sometimes you hate the way your body looks? Me too. Sometimes you think everybody else knows something you don't know? Me too. Sometimes you wonder, would anybody even care if I was gone? Me too. Sometimes you feel like your life is making no difference? Me too. And one of my big things as a preacher, and I got it from Paul, is I try to break down a barrier. Like even right now in this room, it's a struggle for me to stay on this stage, because I don't like that distance between me and you. And it's kind of cool to be standing over you like a triumphant God of the universe. Kind of cool. And I know they need me to be up here so everybody can see. But where I really want to be, if I could tell you the truth, is I really like to be, and I know it's going to make the mic and the lighting, I really want to be down here so I can say, me too. Me too. Me too. I got it from Paul because he said, I know you're going through hell. I know you're going through persecution. I know you're scared. Me too. I know you got some struggles. I know you got some issues. I know you feel sometimes like you'll never be free from this. Me too. Me too. Touch somebody, say me too. In fact, that's why I make people touch people while I'm preaching. And somebody said to me the other day, you know Aussies don't like to touch one another. And I said, touch three people and tell them I don't care. Because when I preach, I figure it's supposed to be interactive. We're in this together. It's not the preacher and then the people. It's the preacher with the people figuring out, how can we fight this devil together? You got questions? Me too. You sometimes wonder, is God real? Me too. You're a preacher. Yeah, but sometimes the whole thing seems crazy to me too. A dead man got up from the grave. That's what we believe. Sometimes that's difficult for me. Sometimes you read the Bible and you don't understand. Me too. Sometimes you try to pray and you fall asleep. Me too. Come on, don't you just feel better? Me too. Just let it out. Me too. Me too. Me too. I struggle all the time. Do you struggle? I struggle. And I got it from Paul, but really, I think Paul got it from Jesus. Because see, Jesus was God, not staying up here on the stage from the heavens, but becoming helpless in the form of an infant, like a little baby, coming down the staircase of humanity so he can make an announcement to the human race. Me too. The scripture says we don't have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness. But when we struggle, we can look eye to eye with a Savior who says, me too. Me too. If they're talking about you, they talked about me first. Me too. My God. Me too. Me too. Me too, man. Me too. Me too. And he gives them the gift of empathy, not to excuse them, but to empower them. Not so they'll just give up the fight. Hey, well, we all struggle. Life sucks. God bless. Let's close in prayer. He said, no, no, no. When you understand that the preacher has the same struggle as the person in the pew, it gives you a strength. And what I notice a lot of times is we admire somebody like Paul and we want to have the same success. This is cool. Just got distracted. We see their success. It's like, I want that. I want that. So we see their success and we want the same success. You see where I'm going with this? But if you want the same success, you're going to have to go through the same struggle. I think I'm going to preach this at the adult session at 2:45 too. You might want to send them a text and tell them I'm going to use this passage, because a lot of people will look at Pastor Phil and Pastor Chris and they'll be like, man, you know, a lot of pastors at least will say, I want to have a great church like them. Because they see their success. Really? You want to have a church like that? Do you want to struggle like they struggled? Do you want to be betrayed like they were betrayed? You want to have the discipline that they had to have to be who they are? You want to have to endure the criticism that they endure? And that's the problem with life. All of our successes are showcased while all of our struggles are hidden. And we can't say it to anybody. I put a quote out one time and people seem to like it, so I give it to you. It said, the reason that we struggle with insecurity is because we're comparing our behind the scenes with everybody else's highlight reel. I think my phraseology is a little off for culturally. You wouldn't say highlight reel. You would say, highlight reel? Man, I'm good. I was kidding. But it's true, because we see all the stuff that others want to show us. But when we're alone with ourselves, we see all the stuff that we don't want to see. And we compare our insides to their outsides, and we conclude we can't make it. We see their smile, we don't see their sorrow. Paul says, I want you to know something. And he does this through the whole level. He says, our struggle is the same. I was talking to a counselor one time, and this is kind of an unpreacherly thing to say, but for the first few years that our church was growing, I went to a professional counselor, not like for deep psychological analysis, but the church was growing fast, and I was so young. I was 27 at the time. The church was already growing. It was already pretty large. And I thought, well, if I don't keep pace internally with my growth that's happening externally, this won't end well. This won't last long. So I went to, I called this guy. I said, hey man, somebody gave me his recommendation. I said, hey man, can I have a counseling appointment with you? And he said, okay, what kind of things are we gonna talk about? I said, well, I don't think it's, I said, it's more like preventative counseling. He said, I've never done that before. Never had anybody ask me that before. He said, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's deal with your struggles before they ruin your life. Let's deal with them while they're little babies instead of when they're big grown. Let's deal with them on level 7-year-old, level 13-year-old, level 16-year-old. So I met with the guy. I met with him for like, I don't know, 3 years off and on. And it was really good. Because what I would do each week, I'd sit down and I would tell him my struggles. And I could say things to him. And at first I would just share a little bit, see how he reacted. And then he wasn't shocked. And then I'm like, well, maybe I could say this and I'll share that. And he wasn't shocked. And it wasn't, you know, huge stuff. I have 14 bodies in my trunk. It wasn't like that. I don't want you to think that. But it was just like being real, just sharing my struggles. And I said, man, hey, this is what I think and this is what sometimes. And he wasn't shocked. And every time it wasn't shocked, it gave me a little bit more strength. Strength for the struggle. Strength to share the struggle. Now, share a little more, share a little more, share a little more, share a little more. Before long, I'm sharing my struggles, and this guy isn't shocked. And one day, I was talking to him about a specific thing, because what I deal with a lot is anger. And I have it sometimes under control and sometimes better than others. If I get tired, then it comes out more. But I had had a kind of a bad episode with my anger a day before I met with him, and I was telling him, man, I'm just so sick of myself. Do you ever feel that way? I'm just so sick of myself. If you hadn't, you hadn't lived long enough yet, but give yourself like 15 more years, you'll be sick of yourself too. And I said, man, I'm so sick of myself. He said, why would you say something like that? I said, because I'm still dealing with the same struggle. I've been paying you $75 an hour for 3 years now, and I'm not fixed. You were supposed to fix me, dog. And I'm still struggling. And he said, yeah, I see how you could say that. And I'm like, come on, man, that's counselor talk. Give me some advice. You're just trying to keep me talking, so I'll keep paying you. And he goes, well, what I would tell you is to evaluate not just what you're struggling with, but the level that you're struggling with it at. I said, what do you mean? He said, okay. And I'm going to share this with you now for free. All right? This cost me like $17,000. I'm going to give it to you right now. He said, you feel like you're circling the same mountain over and over again when you have a struggle. And you feel like nothing's changing on the surface. He said, but what I've noticed about you in meeting with you in these 3 years, and this is what will happen to you if you walk with God. He said, you might still have the same struggle, but you're circling this struggle at a different level. He said, when you first started coming to meet with me, all you talked about was the surface level problems, the appearance of things, the issue, the situation itself. He said, but the more you've been meeting with me, you circle now at a deeper level. Now you're starting to understand what's going on in your heart. That's why I like the theme, Heartbeats. Because I think sometimes we focus on getting students to change their habits. But if their heart doesn't change, their habits won't. If we don't get you changed at your heart level, if your want to doesn't change, you won't ever be able to live up to the standard of perfection if you don't first understand grace. So he said to me, he said, you're circling it, but it's at a deeper level. I said, am I? He said, yeah, because now you're starting to understand motivations. You're starting to understand motivations. And so you're circling it at a deeper level. Can I come down? Is it all right? And he said, that's one thing. He said, but another thing is, I've noticed that you're also circling it at a higher altitude. I said, well, which one is it? Is it deeper or higher? He said, it's both at the same time. Because as you increase your altitude to see how God is working through your struggles to make you stronger, God is able to peel back the layers of your heart and get down deeper to show you what he's been doing all along. So you're still circling the same issue. You're still dealing with the same thing, but it's at a different level now.
And I wanted to give this message today because at this age, you think if you have a really good week at conference, you won't struggle anymore. And then you go home and the struggle is still there. And you think, this didn't work. I'm not going back next year. They don't know what they're talking about. I'm not free. I'm not stronger. I'm not better. I'm not closer to God. But before you disqualify your strength because of your struggle, maybe you need to understand something about the way God teaches you to struggle. I heard a preacher say one time that Jesus only ever struggled one time. You read in scriptures and he was able to do amazing things without struggling. They said that he was able to open blind eyes. He didn't struggle. Whew. Just the most amazing miracles, no struggle, struggle free. He could tell the lame man, get up and walk. And he'd get up and walk, no struggle. He could teach effortlessly hour after hour after hour and he didn't struggle. But one time he struggled, and only one time, was in a garden where he was praying before he went to the cross. When he got in the garden, he started to struggle because he was looking at the prospect of being separated from his father. And when he knelt there, he struggled so much that he was sweating. But his sweat was so intense, it was like drops of blood, like it burst the capillaries because of the struggle. The intensity of the struggle was so great that he prayed, Father, if there's any other way, let this cup pass from me. And he struggled. And out of that struggle, he came to this statement. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. That's really the only struggle that you're ever going to have in your life. Every other struggle that you have will be a result of that internal struggle. My will or his will. That's the struggle. And no matter what it is that you say you struggle with, I don't care what it is. I don't care how it looks on the surface. I don't care what name it has. I don't care what doctors call it. I don't care if it's in your body or in your mind or in your emotions. I don't care if it's in your relationships. I don't care if it's in your family's financial situation. The real struggle is nevertheless, God, when I come to that place of surrender, that's the struggle. That's the struggle. Will I surrender my rights, my life, my time, my gifts, myself, my will, my all? That's the struggle. The struggle to surrender. And that's why the devil's fighting you so hard. See, that's why you struggle with anorexia and bulimia and depression and being down. That's why. Because it's a struggle for your surrender. It's a struggle. It might look one way this day and another way, but it's the same struggle at the heart. It's will you surrender? Same struggle. I could count 25 times 8 times 2 doubled. That's how many people are in the room. I can't do the math on my feet. How many is it? Let's say it's 500. 500 situations, but really just one universal struggle. Paul said, I'm here in prison in Rome. I'm shackled. I'm shackled to this prison guard. This struggle that I'm going through physically is just like the struggle you're going through emotionally. It's just like the struggle that she's going through spiritually. Same struggle. Same struggle. And I need to tell you, Jacob, if you don't learn to win on this level, it's only going to hurt more on the next.
If you don't learn to deal with it here and surrender here, if you carry it with you, if you don't release your bitterness here this week, it's going to grow. It's going to be the same struggle, but it's going to be on a larger scale. Come on, let's beat this thing while it's small. Let's get it on the altar while it's small. Let's deal with Esau right now so you don't have to deal with this when you're 80. Let's deal with it now. Let's get it out in the open and expose it for what it is, a trap, a device, a plot, a ploy. Let's get it out there right now. Let's quit pretending that we're stronger than we are and admit right now, God, I need you. I need you. I need you, Lord. I'm lonely. I need you. I'm hurting. I need you. I'm confused. I need you. I need you. That's all he ever wanted. He didn't need for you to win. He just needed for you to surrender. And then his victory will be yours.